I don't know, I answer honestly. Maybe. It doesn't make it okay, though.
Nothing's gonna make this okay. Not for a long time. Come on.
Jonah holds out a hand for me. I take it and let him pull me to my feet. And I can't help but think that it's Jonah who makes me feel better. Or at least, he makes me hurt a little bit less. Chapter 24. My dad's dressed and sitting beside his bed when Mabel and I knock.
Hey, how are my girls?
He murmurs, his gray eyes flickering to mine.
Ready to whoop your butt tonight, and don't think I'm gonna let you win, Mabel says with a smile that isn't nearly as bright as usual, but is there nonetheless.
She wanders in ahead of me, dragging her sneakers along the dull linoleum floor.
I'd expect nothing less from a shark like you.
My dad's lips twitch.
Did your mom drive you guys here?
No, Jonah did. He had to get his stitches out anyway. My dad thumbs the collar of his jacket.
Well, that's good timing, then.
What's this? Mabel picks up the white folder sitting on the bed.
Oh, that's just some paperwork I've got to go through. Nothing interesting,
he says, smoothly plucking it from her grasp in a way that makes me think he doesn't want her seeing it at all.
Hey, kiddo, why don't you go and grab yourself something at the cafeteria?
He pulls a bill out of his wallet.
We've got another few minutes before the nurse comes back.
Mabel snatches it up eagerly. You guys want anything? He waves her away.
I'm good.
I shake my head and smile, watching her skip out the door. Awkward silence lingers for a moment longer as I lean against the wall and my father fumbles with the folder in his hands, then casts it aside. What is it like to be him right now? To know your clock is almost up?
Kinda thought you might be on a plane heading back to Toronto.
No. As angry and shocked as I was, as I still am, oddly enough, that thought never crossed my mind. How are you feeling today? He takes a deep breath as if to test his lungs.
Better.
More awkward silence. I called Mom. He nods slowly as if he knew I would. He doesn't ask what she said, though, or how she took it. He probably can already guess. And I canceled my flight. He sighs and starts shaking his head.
You didn't have to do that, Calla. I'd rather you go back home with only good memories, not with what's coming.
Well, I'd rather you go to Anchorage and try to slow this down. But neither of us is going to get what we want, are we? I step closer to take a seat on the bed. Are you scared? He looks down at his hands.
Scared? Angry? Sad? Full of regret? A little bit of everything, I guess.
I hesitate, but then reach over to place a tentative hand on top of his, absorbing its warmth. What do you know? My mom was right. We do have the same knuckles, the same finger lengths, and, beneath my gel tips, the same short nail beds. It's a moment before he reacts, placing his other hand over mine. He squeezes.
I'm sorry, kiddo. I really wish it wasn't going to end this way.
But it is what it is, I say, echoing his words from that first night. My eyes stray to that folder again, to the hospice label and tagline, providing end-of-care support to you and your loved ones. A painful ball in my throat swells. So, what needs to be done?
Don't worry about—
No, Dad. There's no avoiding this anymore. Besides, maybe talking about it will help me to start wrapping my head around it. How the hell do I do that? I'm 26 years old. 2 weeks ago, I was drinking martinis and struggling to find the perfect captions to go with pictures of my favorite shoes. I didn't even know this man outside of my imagination. Now, I'm about to help him prepare for his death. He purses his lips.
I don't want to die in a hospital if I can help it. There was a lady here earlier who gave me that pamphlet. She's going to come out to the house next week and talk about options at home. Pain relief, that sort of thing.
Okay. He's going to be in pain. Of course he is. How much pain, though? What's that going to be like to watch? Will I be able to handle watching it? I swallow the rising fear, push it aside.
What else?
The funeral arrangements, I guess,
he says with reluctance.
If it were up to me, I wouldn't bother, but I know Agnes will need it. I don't want anything fancy, though.
So, no to a gilded casket and a string quartet? He makes a soft sound that might be a laugh.
Definitely a pass on those.
Okay. What else?
I've already started the ball rolling with the lawyer, so that's taken care of. I'll be leaving most of my money.
I don't need to know about any of that. You do whatever you want with it. It's yours. The last thing I want is him thinking that I'm sticking around for an inheritance. But what do you think you want to do about Wilde? That's an entire company to deal with once he's gone.
I talked to Howard from Aero Airlines about an hour ago. That's that regional airline that wanted to buy Wilde. I mentioned them before. They've made me a good offer. I think I'm going to take it.
You said they'd swallow Wilde up, though. My family company that's been around since the 1960s that my dad wouldn't leave will no longer exist. It's odd. I hated it for so long, and yet the idea of that makes me sad.
Eventually, probably. But to tell you the truth, it could be good for the villages and this whole part of Alaska in the long run, even if it's called something different. Anyway, they're willing to keep everyone on staff, and that's my only real concern. They want Jonah to run it, too. Give him a COO title or something like that. I'll have to talk to him about it. Not sure that's what he has in mind.
He already said he'd do it.
I know, but it's a whole different ballgame being tied up with a big company like that. He'd have board members to answer to and all kinds of new processes and policies.
He smiles.
Don't know if you've noticed yet, but Jonah doesn't do too well with rules and authority, and people telling him what to do.
Nope, haven't noticed, I mutter wryly, earning his soft chuckle. Either way, he'd do it for as long as they need him to. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
Even if it means sitting in a chair all day every day instead of being in the air? Oh, I know. If there's one thing about Jonah, he's loyal to a fault. He'll do it long after I'm in the ground.
My dad sighs heavily.
I don't want that kind of life for him. He doesn't suit it anyway.
Is there anything else?
Just keep living, I guess.
He gives me a resigned smile.
Try to have as many good days as I can until I use them up.
We can do that, I say with determination, giving his hand another squeeze. I don't have to be okay with it, but I can be here for it.
Well, all right then.
A slow, resigned smile curls his lips.
How about we start by finding Jonah and getting the hell out of this joint?
The moment the attendant pauses at the end of the ramp outside the hospital's main doors, my dad is pushing himself out of the wheelchair.
Thanks. I've got it from here, Doug.
The attendant gives him a scolding look. My dad holds his hands in the air in surrender.
If I fall on my butt, I won't sue anyone but myself. I swear.
With a lingering pause, he finally nods.
You take care of yourself, Ren. Will do.
Doug spins the chair around and disappears through the doors, leaving us to cross the parking lot ourselves. Jonah smooths a hand over the fresh pink scar on his forehead.
Don't know why I needed to see the doctor for that. I could have just pulled them out myself.
But then you couldn't shamelessly flirt with her, I mutter. We found him perched on a patient table in the office of a 40-something-year-old blonde doctor, complimenting her on her husky dog sled team, pictured on the wall, and telling her he'll definitely come back to her the next time he crashes a plane and needs stitches.
Do you think it worked?
Absolutely. She's on the phone with her best friend right now, saying she's fallen for a jackass with a death wish.
Isn't that basically what you did?
He retorts. My cheeks burn as I spear Jonah with a warning glare, feeling Mabel's curious eyes flicker back and forth between us. Whatever thoughts are going on in that innocent mind are thankfully held back by a mouthful of chocolate muffin.
Well, isn't this a surprise?
My dad murmurs quietly, then starts to chuckle. The sound dies as he turns away to try to hide his grimace of pain. But we all notice, and it throws a dark, sobering cloud over the moment of brevity the rest of the way to Jonah's SUV.
Here,
Jonah calls out,
tossing his keys in the air for me to catch. I frown. Why do I need these?
Because you're driving.
Funny. I make to toss them back, but he heads for the passenger side. Jonah!
You think I'm going to chauffeur your ass around for the next however long? Think again.
He climbs in. I'll just call a cab, I holler through the driver's side window, left open from the ride in.
You're learning how to drive right now. Get in.
You don't know how to drive? Mabel exclaims with a shocked frown. With a sigh of irritation, I hold the keys out to my father.
Don't you dare, Ren,
Jonah warns sternly.
Sorry, kiddo. My hands are full.
He waves the small paper bag with his prescription in the air as he steps around me to duck into the back seat. I'll drive if no one else wants to, Mabel chirps, her eyes lighting up. I know how.
You hear that, Calla? Even Mabel knows how. She's 12.
Of course she does. I climb into the SUV with reluctance. I don't want to do this right now, Jonah. It wouldn't be so bad if we were on the empty road by my dad's house and we didn't have my dad and Mabel with us.
Hey, just trust me, would you?
He peers over at me, and I see a raw pleading in those blue eyes. As if I can say no to that. Fine, I grumble, jamming the key into the ignition. But for the record, this is a bad idea.
That's what you usually go for, isn't it? Bad ideas?
He murmurs. Oh, you're so clever. And relentless with the quips that keep corralling my mind right back to me and him. Do you guys ever stop arguing? God, Mabel bursts, clicking her seatbelt in place.
Sometimes we do. Right, Barbie?
We definitely weren't arguing last night, or this morning before getting up to come here. Twice. My dad clears his throat from the seat directly behind me.
Just stay to the right and stop when the sign says stop. You'll do fine.
And don't hit the people walking on the side of the road, Mabel adds. I can't believe I'm getting driving tips from a 12-year-old. With a sigh, I crank the engine. I can't even reach the pedals.
Here.
Jonah leans forward, gripping the back of my seat with one hand, while he slides his arm down between my knees to the floor in front. With a click and a tug, my seat moves forward.
Better?
I stretch my legs out. Yeah.
All right.
His warm, strong hand lands on my knee, giving it a tight squeeze.
Just do what I say, and we might make it home alive.
I grip the steering wheel, my nerves churning in my stomach. Suddenly, the streets of this dusty little frontier town seem too busy, but at least it gives us all something to focus on besides my dad. I shake my head and start to laugh. Damn Yeti. That's exactly why he's doing this to me. Oh my God. No, Calla. Seriously, forget about the stupid studded shoes. Diana sighs heavily in my ear. Whatever. I've already got it mostly done anyway, with what you sent me. I toggle over the screen, testing the links to the pictures of Diana posing downtown with the city bustle in the background, the blur of people whizzing by on bikes and in cars, hordes of pedestrians milling at a street corner waiting for the light to change, rows of white tents that signal one festival or another. I can almost hear the buzz of life, and I ache for it. Aaron took some decent shots, and he complained through every minute of it. You wouldn't believe the things I had to promise to get him to agree in the first place. You're right, and I'm positive that I do not want to know. But I'm glad she's found a replacement for me. She sighs. So, when do you think you'll be back? I drop my voice. Even though the living room window is closed, I can hear Mabel's bursts of laughter and goading exclamations as she and my dad hover over the checkerboard. I have no idea. A month? Maybe two? Or will it be longer? Will I be here to see the first snowfall? Because aside from some woolen socks, I am not prepared for that. God, that's a long time. Yeah, but I'm sure I'll keep busy. How's the hot Viking? Oh, man. Still hot, I murmur, as an odd tingling sense courses through my entire body, like it does every time I think of him now.
There's so much I have to tell her, but now is not the time to even hint at it. I'll talk to you later. We end the call just as Agnes pokes her head out onto the porch.
There's still some chicken left if you're hungry. I already set aside plenty for Jonah.
Agnes and Mabel walked into my dad's kitchen around 3 while he was napping, Mabel's arms hugging her latest plucked catch from the farm, Agnes's laden with potatoes and carrots and lettuce for green salad. We hadn't made plans for dinner, but I was thankful to see them show up all the same. By the time my dad staggered out of his bedroom, the house was smelling of roasted meat, and we'd settled into solitary tasks, Agnes with a book, Mabel with a game on her phone, and me with my computer, as if we all lived here. He didn't say anything, didn't question it, just smiled at us and sank into his lazy boy. I'm full, but thanks. I offer Agnes a smile before turning back to my screen, but she lingers, pushing the sliding door shut behind her.
Still working on wild website stuff?
No. Is there any point? Just keeping my mind busy. I toggle over to another screen, one of about 30 I have open, to pictures of my time here so far.
That looks like Quigilinook,
Agnes murmurs, edging closer.
That's a nice one.
No.
No?
She frowns in thought.
I think it is.
The more I stare at it, the more I disagree. It doesn't do it justice. At all. None of them do. She tips her head as she ponders it.
Maybe it has a story to it that I can't see.
Maybe. On the screen, it is a pretty enough view, I'll admit. Not the barren wasteland my mother insisted was waiting for me. But it's just another picture from a plane, high up in the sky. You wouldn't know why we went. That it's where the little girl with asthma who needed the ventilator lives with her family and 200 other villagers on what feels like the very edge of the earth when you're landing. You wouldn't know that Jonah pounded on my door and practically forced me out that day. Jonah, the broody bush pilot who started off as my enemy and has somehow evolved into something far more important to me than a friend. Agnes settles down onto the edge of the wicker love seat where there's room. I sense that she wants to talk, as her gaze roams the porch, stalling on the lights dangling above.
Christmas in summer.
Welcome to my life. My mom has lights up in our backyard all year round. Tiny white lights that weave around the lilac bushes and Japanese maples and the trunk of the massive, century-old oak tree that Simon has had to pay arborists tens of thousands to maintain over the years. This is kitschy by comparison, but it's still cozy.
All this old stuff you dragged out.
She looks around us at the transformation.
I'll bet it's nice out here at night.
It is, actually. We were out here last night after the sunset.
You and Jonah?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I ignore her curious murmur and keep scrolling. The pictures of Jonah cutting firewood appear, and my finger stalls. My eyes caught momentarily on his hard flesh and his statuesque form, his olive-skinned complexion all the more so next to the misty fog.
Now there's a fashionable look for your website.
Agnes chuckles. I keep flipping, pretending that my cheeks aren't red. I'll admire the rest of those later, in private.
Marie was by the house on Saturday night, looking for Jonah. Forgot to mention that to him,
she says casually. Big surprise. My tone is more clipped than I intend, a reaction to the way my stomach tightens instantly, despite what Jonah told me about their platonic relationship. Marie's not going anywhere. She's in Alaska for the long haul. Will he change his mind down the road and decide he can give her what she wants? The very idea of Jonah with her, or anyone else, makes my chest burn. Did you tell her we were stuck at the checkpoint for the night?
I did.
Good. I can't help the jealous little voice inside my head. I feel Agnes's watchful gaze on me as I scroll through the rest of the cabin trip pictures, and I'm pretty sure the shrewd little woman somehow heard that. But as always, she keeps those thoughts, and all thoughts about Jonah and me and whatever is going on between us, to herself.
Listen, I was hoping you could help me and Mabel. Sharon and Max are leaving next week, and we've been talking about throwing a little party for them at Wild.
A party?
Yeah, sort of a combo baby shower and farewell.
I hesitate. Do you think it's right to throw a party now? I drop my voice. With everything that's going on? I mean, my dad's got a meeting with the guys from Arrow later this week to start the sale process, and he just got out of the hospital. It's going to take time for him to recover from that complication. Plus, I'm sure I'm not the only one who's in shock over his news.
If not now, then when?
Her black gaze drifts out to the wide expanse, to a regional airline descending from the sky.
They'll be long gone by the time Ren...
Her voice fades. She swallows.
Life will keep moving and changing, whether we want it to or not, Calla. There will be days to mourn when it's time. But Sharon and Max are leaving us, and their baby will be born, and we need to celebrate the time we have with them while we have them here. That's all we can do with anyone.
Her face slowly splits into a wide smile, even as her eyes shimmer.
Besides, it'll make Ren happy to see everyone come together like that. He's always liked a good party.
I sigh. She's right. Of course I'll help.
Good. I ordered a bunch of cake mixes and some decorations and things a while back. They should be here any day now.
I guess there's no such thing as Amazon Prime around here, I say wryly. She gives me a look.
That is Amazon Prime.
We share a soft laugh. But then her brow pulls tight.
I don't think I ever thanked you for coming.
She reaches forward to clasp my forearm.
It feels right having you here with us. I can't imagine doing it any other way.
My throat begins to prickle for the tiny woman whose own heart has, however unintentionally, also been broken by my father in the past. And still, she stands stoically beside him, offering her friendship and unrequited love. How many hearts have been pained or broken because my dad decided to sit down next to my mom at the bar that night? I wonder, would knowing what the future held have made either of them stand and walk out? Something tells me no. I don't think I ever thanked you for calling me, I respond softly, thinking back to that night on the porch steps, wearing one shoe with Simon sitting next to me. It feels like a lifetime ago. She inhales sharply.
You know, next to phoning Derek's parents to tell them about the crash, that was the hardest call I've ever had to make.
And all I heard was a stranger's voice. Some woman who was in my dad's life while I was not. Funny enough, she feels like the farthest thing from a stranger to me now. Are you angry with him? Her lips wobble a little before she presses them firmly together, cutting off the rare show of emotion.
I love him, and I'm here for him. That's all that matters.
The ever-patient Agnes. She would have been perfect for my dad. She is perfect for him. The sliding door creaks open then, and Jonah steps out with a heaping plate of food. My heart instantly leaps.
This looks good, Aggie.
With a gentle pat on my forearm, she collects my dinner plate and moves from the seat.
You're later than I expected. Lost a rudder coming home.
He squeezes her slender shoulder on his way past and then settles into the spot she just left, filling the space, his big warm body pressing against me. He cuts into his chicken with a soft,
Hey.
I haven't kissed him since this morning. I feel an overwhelming urge to lean in and do it now, but I hold myself back. That's something you do when you're dating, and that's not what we are. What the hell are we, though, besides two people finding comfort in each other while we watch a man we both love die? Maybe that in itself is enough. So, you lost a rudder? I finally ask.
Yup. Must have busted on the gravel bar I had to land on to drop off supplies.
He mumbles. Is it dangerous?
Need my rudders to steer the plane, so... Not ideal.
Are you okay, though? He smirks through a mouthful.
I'm here, aren't I?
The memory of Betty's crumpled body and a bloodied Jonah hits me then. That was just last week, days ago. It seems like there's something new every day. Is this what life with Jonah would be like? Him coming home to dinner telling me about the latest danger he's encountered as if it's just another day at work? Because that's exactly what it is for him. I think I'm beginning to understand what my mother meant about living in daily fear. Here I am, only days into this, and my stomach is already in knots over the thought of him crashing. Maybe that's because I already witnessed it once. Or maybe it's because I'm not made for this bush life, just like my mother wasn't.
What's that look for?
He asks. Nothing. Just nothing. What am I supposed to say? This is Jonah's world, not mine. I'm just living in it for now. He glances over his shoulder as if making sure no one's hovering at the window, listening.
I moved around a bunch of things on the schedule for tomorrow and the rest of the week. Figured you, me, and Ren could take Veronica and head out somewhere in the mornings. That way, you can spend some time with him and he gets to fly. I'll co-pilot for him.
That sounds amazing. And so thoughtful of Jonah. A small thrill sparks inside me. Where will we go? He shrugs.
Wherever. There's all kinds of things to see. You haven't even scratched the surface of Alaska yet.
That Jonah would go to all the trouble to do this, for both my dad and me, makes my heart swell. Do you think he'll go for it, though? I heard him talking to Agnes about going back to work tomorrow.
You think we're going to give him a choice?
He stabs at a piece of carrot.
If I have to throw him over my shoulder, he'll be there.
An overwhelming wave of gratitude hits me. I throw my arms around his thick neck, hugging him tightly. Thank you, I whisper, my mouth catching his earlobe. He lets out a soft groan that reminds me of the sound I woke to this morning, with his hard body molded to my back. I close my eyes, longing to be that close to him again.
Hey!
Mabel pokes her head out and I peel away abruptly. Her wide-eyed look tells me she's finally starting to clue in about what's going on between the two of us.
We're gonna watch Notting Hill. Mom's making popcorn. You guys are coming in, right?
Thankfully, given her crush on him, she doesn't seem resentful with me about it.
We'll see,
Jonah grumbles between mouthfuls in a way that could translate into not a chance in hell. We'll be there in a few minutes, I assure her, erasing the disappointment from her face. As soon as she's gone, I give his shoulder a smack. Don't be an ass. He sighs with exaggeration.
Fine. I'll make you a deal.
I wait as he takes his time chewing.
I'll go in there and watch whatever the hell you want.
He locks gazes with me.
But then you have to come over after Ren's gone to sleep.
A nervous flutter stirs inside me.
What?
Like, sneak out of my dad's house as if I'm some teenager? His eyebrow arches.
Why sneak? You don't want anyone to know about this?
No, it's not that. I just... Maybe it's easier if we keep this on the down low. There's no having to explain or rationalize anything to anyone. He shrugs.
Fine. I don't care how you do it, so long as you're in my bed tonight. And every other night that you're in Alaska.
He sounds so resolute. What if I'm here for the next 6 months? His eyes drift to my mouth.
That's kind of what I'm hoping for.
I have to tell myself to breathe. Deal. Because suddenly, I can't imagine myself anywhere else. Jonah frowns curiously.
Now what does that look for?
Nothing. I was just remembering something my dad said. About how he knew it would never work out with my mom in the long run, but he wasn't about to fight what was happening. I think I'm starting to get it now, Dad. Chapter 25. So, people actually choose to do this for an entire vacation? I curl my arms around my body, readjusting my position for the 100th time in the uncomfortable folding seat. We're on hour 3 of sitting in this rented tin can of a fishing boat. My hand is cramping over the fishing rod Jonah shoved into it. I reek of bug repellent, and I'm getting twitchy.
They don't just choose to do it. They pay big bucks to get out here.
My dad reels his line in a touch.
We make tens of thousands every summer flying people in.
Oh, wait! I think I've got...
Mabel pauses, then leans forward. Nothing. She turns and gives us a toothy, sheepish grin. The same one she's given the last 11 times she's mistaken the current for a fish. I swat at a fly buzzing around my head. How long before we catch something and can leave?
Never, if you guys keep talking. You're scaring all the fish away.
Jonah is stretched out in the chair beside me, his boots resting on the edge of the boat, his rod off the opposite side. He looks like a damn model in that pose, with his USAF hat pulled low and his sunglasses masking his eyes. Hour two was all about me stealing frequent glances at him and fantasizing about what we'd do tonight, until Mabel asked me why my skin was so flushed and I had to shut those thoughts down. I'm good with never, I mutter. When are we leaving? I have to pee. My dad chuckles. Jonah sighs heavily, as if annoyed, but when he tips his head back to see me, he's wearing a smirk that's equally obnoxious and sexy. This sucks, I mouth. Say that again, he responds, his devilish eyes shifting to my lips, and I can read the dirty thoughts percolating there. My cheeks heat. Stop it.
Are you complaining about your tour guide's choice for today, Barbie?
He says out loud, grinning. Any more protests I may have had melt instantly. No. Today is perfect, I say, with full sincerity and a warm smile, because even if it is an overcast day and I want to toss this fishing rod into the lake and fly home, I know that I'm going to think back to this tin can boat and Mabel's false alarms and the eerie quiet of this remote lake in the middle of nowhere, Alaska, and I'm going to remember it fondly. Just like the last 3 days have been perfect, because my dad has gotten to do what he loves, fly, and I've been there, sitting right behind him the entire time, watching his deeply contented smile for every second of every moment of it. We've cruised through the Alaskan skies for hours each morning, over wide plains and icy glaciers, into deep valleys, circling around to get glimpses of brown bears roaming the wild. And every evening, the five of us have gathered at my dad's like some cobbled-together family for a meal, an evening that no one asks for, but everyone seems to need, gravitating to that lifeless living room, filling it with life. And every night, when my dad goes to bed, I duck out to Jonah's, making sure to sneak back in before my dad rises for the next day. With a small, knowing smile, Jonah reaches across and gives my thigh a squeeze before turning his attention back to his rod. A peaceful, comfortable silence settles over the four of us as we all get lost in our private thoughts. It's interrupted again just moments later. I'm hungry, Mabel announces.
Oh, for fuck's sake. I am never going fishing with you two children ever again,
Jonah mutters as my dad bursts out laughing, not bothering to scold Jonah for his language around a 12-year-old. There's no point trying to censor that guy. Did you pack any snacks? I reach across to smooth a hand over his shoulders, an excuse to touch him. Maybe some of that beef jerky from Ethel? Beef jerky? Mabel frowns with confusion. Nobody dries beef in the villages. There aren't any cows. I catch my dad's cringe, and my stomach clenches as it dawns on me. What the hell did you feed me, Jonah?
Your mother had them strung up around the outside up there.
My dad draws a line in the air along the top of the screens before letting his eyes drift to the porch ceiling.
But I think I like this better.
It's nice after dark.
I'll have to stay up and see it one of these nights.
He butts his cigarette out in a can and pulls the outside porch door shut.
Who knew a morning of fishing would wipe me out like that?
A lump forms in my throat as I study him quietly. It's been 5 days since he got out of the hospital. His complexion is still sallow. He's been ducking away for naps in the afternoons and wincing with his coughing fits, which are becoming more frequent, not less. And the past 2 nights, I noticed that his dinner plate has had less on it than Mabel's. Maybe we stay home tomorrow. All this flying can't help with you recovering from last weekend. He waves my caution off.
Nah, I'm good. A night's sleep and I'll be ready to go.
I want to believe him. Jonah said something about going to a bear park tomorrow.
He must be thinking about Katmai. I haven't been there in years.
Dad scratches his chin with interest.
Hope he called Frank.
Is that the tour guide that you've done a lot of business with?
Yeah. Okay, good.
He nods with satisfaction.
I haven't seen him in person in years. It'll be good to catch up.
One last time, I add in my head, the feeling in my chest heavy. He begins shuffling toward the house. Night, Dad. I curl my arms around myself for comfort as much as warmth.
Night, kiddo.
He pauses at the door.
So, I take it you've forgiven Jonah?
I sigh. I haven't decided yet.
At least you didn't go hungry up at that cabin.
Muskrat, Dad. He let me eat muskrat. A revelation that had me gagging over the side of the boat when I found out, and gritting my teeth for the rest of the way home. Even now I feel the sudden urge to scrub my tongue.
That's Ethel's specialty. She's known for it. You liked it well enough, didn't you?
I glare at him. Muskrat. He chuckles.
Fair enough. Well, Katmai is a good 300 miles away, so we'll have to get an early start. Do me a favor, and if you forgive him enough to go to his place tonight, can you wake me up when you sneak back in the morning?
My jaw drops.
I may be sick, but I'm not blind, Calla.
He smiles.
It's okay. I'm happy you two have each other.
You're not going to warn me that we're making a huge mistake? I ask warily.
Do you think you are?
Yes. No. I know it's not forever. I know he's going to stay here and I'm going to go home. I feel like I have to say that out loud to prove that I'm not some lovesick idiot, that I haven't deluded myself into thinking this is something it's not. And yet, I can't imagine being anything else with Jonah than what we are while I'm here. Jonah is Alaska to me. My dad smiles softly.
I've got a lot of regrets, kiddo, but falling for your mother has never been one of them.
With that, he disappears inside.
This is good, Calla. Really good.
Agnes beams at me and then turns back to Wilde's lobby, which we spent the last 2 hours transforming into a blue and green party room with balloons and streamers for Sharon and Max's send-off this afternoon.
And we have a lot of food coming.
I had legitimate cupcake nightmares, I admit, eyeing the trays that sit on the folding tables to the far right near the receptionist counter. It took Mabel and me all day yesterday to bake and decorate the 12 dozen of them. Exhausted, I fell asleep in Jonah's bed last night while he was brushing his teeth. How many people are coming anyway?
More than I invited, I think.
She laughs nervously. Some of the villagers caught wind of it and are trying to make it down. It'll be a nice send-off for them, at least. I didn't realize Max and Sharon were so popular. Do you know where my dad is?
In town with the lawyers. He's trying to get the bulk of the paperwork finalized with Arrow.
Agnes sighs as she looks around.
Things are going to change around here pretty soon.
But not today. She smiles and reaches out to pat my bicep.
Not today.
Okay, well, if there's nothing else, I'm going to run home and get cleaned up. I still have pastel green frosting in my hair, thanks to Jonah. And a sticky coating of it all over my body where he decided to smear it before licking it off. But I don't think Agnes needs or wants to know those extra details. Her dark eyes roam my face and then take in the messy pile of hair atop my head. But in typical Agnes fashion, she merely smiles.
Moose meat, reindeer dogs, king salmon, herring eggs, bannock. That's a flatbread. You might like that.
I trail closely behind Jonah as he identifies the various trays of food along the tables, courtesy of the 80-odd people milling around Wilde's lobby, most from Bangor, but plenty who took the river down from the villages. The place is alive with a buzz of laughter and friendly conversation. Agnes was right, after all. A party is what we all needed. Jonah points to a dish of glistening yellow cubes, a thick, dark skin lining one side.
You won't like that.
What's that? I point to a bowl of what appears to be white cream and blueberries.
That's called Eskimo ice cream.
Dairy?
Nope. And you definitely won't like it.
She won't know unless you let her try it, Tulukuruk.
A familiar voice behind us calls out. Jonah peers over his shoulder at the old woman with the pink headscarf, his surprise clear on his face.
Ethel, down the river twice in 2 weeks.
Not just me, Josephine too.
She nods to a young woman of maybe 20 standing over by the water cooler with a thick jet black braid that reaches her butt. A plump baby of maybe 8 months with a full head of dark hair sits in a sling across her chest, his wide eyes alert and curious as they take in the many faces.
Damn, he's gotten big, hasn't he?
As if Josephine heard Jonah, she turns and then gives a small, shy wave.
Give me a sec, would you, Ethel?
Jonah says with a gentle pat on her shoulder, and I watch him wander over to them, his smile wide and genuine as they begin talking.
Tulukuruk has a lot of soft spots, but I think his biggest is for the young ones.
Ethel murmurs. She's wearing the same New York Knicks sweatshirt that she had on the last time I met her. I wonder if she's an avid basketball fan, or if it's just something warm for her to wear. Why do you call him that? It's the same name she gave him that day in Myers.
Because he's a helper of our people, but he's also a trickster. It means raven.
I chuckle. Yeah, that's so perfect. Tulukuruk. I might have to start calling him that. Josephine slips her son from the sling and hands him into Jonah's waiting arms. My heart unexpectedly swells at the sight of the exchange, of Jonah's enormous hands gripping the baby's entire torso as he holds him up in the air above him, bringing him down to let the boy paw at his beard. Jonah laughs and the boy laughs, and suddenly I'm able to picture Jonah as a father. Jonah will make a good father. And his family will live in Alaska with him, a truth that squashes my swelling heart back to reality.
The raven and his goose wife.
I turn to meet Ethel's sharp, wise eyes. Sorry?
The story. Jonah is the raven, and you are his goose wife.
She studies me for a long moment with a sad smile, and I get the distinct impression she has discerned everything there is to know about us. Is she saying Jonah and I should get married?
Excuse me, everyone. Can I just grab your attention for a minute?
My skin tingles as I turn toward the front desk where Max balances on a chair, his hands in the air in a sign of surrender, waiting to collect the attention of the people in the room.
Sharon and I just wanted to take a moment to say thank you for coming out today to make this send-off extra special, but also for making our time in Alaska something we'll remember for the rest of our lives.
He's smiling wide as he talks to the crowd, his voice mid-timbre.
I'll admit, it was a bit of a shock when we first moved here. Can't say I'm going to miss the long cold winters, though something good did come out of that.
He gestures to Sharon's belly with a red-faced chuckle, and someone lets out a whistle.
And I'm definitely not going to miss the whole honey bucket thing in some of the villages.
A round of chuckles erupts, and I make a mental note to find out what a honey bucket is. Something tells me it has nothing to do with honey.
But what we will no doubt miss are the people. How caring you are. How close you all are. How hard you work to keep your way of life. No matter where we go, we'll never find the same thing. I'm sure of it.
My gaze drifts over the crowd to see plenty of proud smiles and nods, and a few tears.
So, again, thank you from the bottoms of our hearts.
Max's hands press against his chest over his heart, the sincerity pouring from him palpable.
And I promise, we'll be sure to bring Thor back for a visit as soon as we can.
Sharon clears her voice and shoots Max a glare.
Okay, okay. So we haven't agreed on the name yet.
He grins.
But if you guys all want to do me a favor and start calling him that, I figure it'll be harder for her to deny me when the time comes.
A round of laughter goes up and Sharon shakes her head, but she's giggling now too.
Just a couple more things. I want to say an extra special thanks.
He seeks out Jonah, who still has Josephine's boy in his arms.
Damn, man. A baby sure looks good on you.
Another round of laughter erupts, along with Jonah's holler of,
Don't rush me. But seriously, Jonah, I've learned more about flying from you in these past 3 years than I'll learn the rest of my life. I still think you're one crazy son of a bitch, landing on that mountain ridge not once, not twice, but 3 times just to get those climbers off there. But man, do you know how to fly. And I hope I get the chance to work with you again one day. Just come back to Alaska and you've got it, buddy.
Jonah throws with a grin.
'Cause you know I ain't ever leaving.
Everyone laughs. Meanwhile, my lungs constrict. Jonah is not ever leaving Alaska. I've been acutely aware of it since our first kiss, and trying to ignore it every time he rolls his body off mine, curls his arms around me, and we drift off into the quiet night. I've known, and still I've gone to him, day after day, night after night, happy to take everything I can have while I can. Never expecting to feel this much for him. I haven't even left yet, and already it hurts.
Damn straight we'll be back. 5 years. Tops.
Max chuckles softly and then turns to search out my dad, who's milling in a back corner, his hands clasped casually in front of him, smiling quietly. Max takes a deep breath.
Ren, I want to thank you for believing in me enough to hire me. Best thank Agnes, then. She's the one who pulled your resume out of the pile and called you up for the interview.
I just liked his smile, Agnes says with a shrug. Another round of laughter.
Well, you didn't just give me a job, but you gave one to Sharon, too. Lord knows she would have gone crazy here if you didn't, and I think you knew that. I mean, happy wife, happy life, right?
A chorus of agreement sounds from the married men in the room.
Whatever the reason, I owe you big time for that, and for all the memories we've gained over these past 3 years with the Wild family. Sharon and I, we've been laying in bed at night reminiscing, just like this past January when we got slammed with that massive storm, and then it was like minus 20 for 5 days straight. Everyone was going stir crazy, so what do these guys do but throw a freaking luau with Hawaiian music and food and everything? Ren showed up wearing a grass skirt and coconuts. I swear. I've got pictures.
Chuckles roll through the room.
And then there was that time last winter when we built that gigantic snow cave out back and lit it all up with candles. Ren hauled out the old grill and started grilling burgers. It was like a summer barbecue, except with your nose hair stuck together.
Max sighs.
Man, we've had so many good times with you and everyone at Wild.
He holds a hand up.
I am still sorry about the wallpaper. I didn't know how much those ducks meant to you, but if it helps at all, it was Jonah's idea, and I was drunk as a skunk.
And thus, the mystery of the duck nipples solved. My dad shakes his head, but he's smiling.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, thank you for giving me a chance to fly up here for you, for letting us be a part of the Wild family, and all the laughs, and,
He bows his head a minute, clears his throat, and when he looks up again, I see the sheen in his eyes.
I sure am gonna miss you,
he manages to say through a hoarse voice. Sharon's hand goes to her mouth as she dips her head, trying to hide the tears that now roll down her cheeks. Other sniffles sound then. I dare to let my gaze wander, to see the awareness and sadness in everyone's eyes, the tense jaws, the resigned smiles. We all know what Max really means. And suddenly, this doesn't feel so much like a farewell party for the happy couple leaving Alaska, as much as a final goodbye for the quiet man who stands in the corner. His shoulders hunched inward, his face sallow and drawn. His tired eyes and stoic smile telling me what I've noticed but refused to accept. Suddenly, the air in this lobby is too thick, the buzz too loud, the gazes too many. Slipping around the food tables, I wordlessly duck into the office and keep going, through the staff room, down a long, narrow hall. I push through the door and out into the warehouse. The garage-type doors are open, allowing in a cool breeze, damp from the mist. A few grounds crew look on curiously as they haul pallets of cargo across the floor, but no one says anything about me being in there. I rush all the way through and beyond to the hangar, my arms curled around my chest for comfort and finding none. Veronica sits alone in the corner. She must be inside for maintenance work. I dash for her now, climbing up with ease to curl into the pilot's seat, my dad's seat. I smooth my hands over the yoke for a moment, and then I pull my legs to my chest, bury my face in my lap, and let myself cry as reality sinks in. The door opens with a creak. Somehow I know it's Jonah without having to look.
He's not going to last much longer, is he? I ask through my sniffles.
After a long moment, a warm, comforting hand smooths over my shoulders.
He's going downhill fast.
Finally, I dare tip my head up to rest my chin on my knees. I can only imagine how red and blotchy my face is. For once, I'm glad to be makeup-free.
I should have called. All those years that I didn't call, I wish I had. And now there's no time left.
You and Max and everyone else have all these great memories with him, and the luaus and the winter barbecues and the stupid ducks, and I am never going to have that. I don't have enough time. I thought I was all cried out, but a fresh set of tears begins to trickle. I've spent the last 12 years dwelling on all the things Ren Fletcher isn't. I should have had the guts to come and find out all the things he is. Loaded silence lingers in the plane. Jonah sighs.
You should have called him. He should have called you. Your mom should have never left. Ren should have left Alaska for you. Who the hell knows what's right and what it would have led to? But it doesn't matter, because you can't change any of that.
His thumb draws a soothing circle over my spine, just below my neck.
My dad and I didn't have a great relationship. I think you've probably figured that out. It always seemed to be a power struggle with him. He didn't take too well to not having control over my life, said a lot of shitty things, and never once followed them up with an apology. Cutting him off and moving up here was the right thing to do. I knew that in my gut. Still, in those last few days watching him go, listening to him tell me how much he regretted trying to force what he wanted on me, I kept playing conversations in my head over and over again, finding things I should have said or done, times I should have reached out. You can spend an entire lifetime doing that and still get nowhere.
He lifts his baseball cap off his head and lets it settle onto his knee.
I found this a few days after the funeral in his closet. There was a whole box of USAF stuff, hat, sweatshirt, jacket, all still with tags on them, along with a card he wrote to me, telling me how much he loved me and how excited he was that I'd get to experience that life. I guess he had it all ready to give me after I was officially enlisted, and then he shoved it in the closet and tried to forget about it when it didn't happen.
Jonah's lips press together.
He's been gone 5 years, and I still feel guilty every time I look at this damn thing.
I rub away my tears.
You're not alone. You've got me, and I've got you, and we'll get through this together.
He slides a gentle hand up and down my arm. Even if I'm in Toronto? His chest swells with a deep breath.
There's this thing called a phone.
You are actually mocking me about a phone?
Oh, wait, that's right. You don't like calling your friends,
he mutters wryly. I know he means to lighten the mood, and yet my stomach clenches. Is that what we are? Friends? He curses under his breath and then sighs again.
We're complicated. That's what we are.
There's that goddamn word again. Have you heard of a goose wife? There's a pause, and then Jonah chuckles, sliding his hat back on.
Ethel and her tales.
She said you were the raven and I was your goose wife. What did she mean?
It's just a silly story about a raven that falls in love with a goose.
And what happens? He chews his lip as if deciding if he should continue. Fine. I'll just Google it. I slip my phone from my pocket. He reaches over to seize my hand within his and sighs in resignation.
They stay together for the summer, and when she leaves just before the first snowfall, he decides to follow her south. But there's no way he can survive the flight across the ocean. Finally, he has no choice but to say goodbye and go home.
Why doesn't she go back with him?
Because she's a goose. She can't survive the winter.
He admits reluctantly. My chest tightens. That story doesn't sound so silly after all. In fact, it sounds a hell of a lot like us. Maybe not the falling in love part, but certainly the rest of it. Though, whatever I feel for Jonah, I'd be fooling myself if I didn't recognize it as much more than a frivolous crush on an attractive guy.
No, I guess it doesn't.
The look on Jonah's face tells me he sees the truth of it, too. Jonah and my father are waiting next to Veronica when I pull into Wilde's parking lot in Jonah's truck. Did you sort out all the accounting stuff? I ask. My spirit's oddly high today, thanks to the clear blue skies and warm sun. In the 3 weeks that I've been here, this is by far the nicest day we've had.
Yep,
Jonah mutters, his arm folded across his chest and a severe look painted across his face. What's going on? I ask warily.
Nothing,
my dad murmurs, smiling, and I try to ignore the heavy feeling weighing down my chest as I take in his thin frame and his tired eyes. He went to bed last night right after barely eating dinner and was still asleep when I came home from Jonah's. So, where are we going today?
You and I are going to go for a little spin around the block, kiddo,
he says. Just us? I glance at Jonah to see his jaw clench. That's what pissed him off so much.
It's fine.
My dad smiles with assurance.
Just this once.
I hold my breath. After a moment, Jonah finally nods.
You good?
My dad's voice fills my headset as he grips the yoke, his contented smile focused on the wide-open sky. Yeah.
You sure?
It just feels strange, I finally admit. This is my first time flying without Jonah in one of these planes. He chuckles.
He's like George's hula girl Jillian. He makes you feel safe.
Jonah the hula boy, I joke. Ironic, isn't it? I think back to the flight in that Super Cub. He didn't start out that way.
You two sure have come a long way. I'm glad to see it.
The headset carries his heavy sigh.
I'm giving him this plane, along with Archie and Jughead. Those weren't included in my deal with Arrow.
That's good. He'll take care of them.
And his house. I'm leaving him that. It's not worth a lot, but at least he'll have a roof over his head.
Dad, I don't want to talk about—
I know you don't. But just humor me, will ya?
He says softly. I listen numbly as he goes through the division of his assets, of the houses, of the truck, of the checkerboard. That's going to Mabel. And the money from the sale of Wilde is going to me. I don't know what to say about it, and I don't feel that I deserve it. But if there's one thing I've learned about my father, it's that there's no point in trying to change his mind once it's made up. Dad, why did you really want to come out with me alone today? I finally ask. It can't just be for this. We could do that on the ground. It's a moment before he answers.
Talked to your mother last night.
Really? She called you?
No, I called her. Thought it was time we caught up. I told her how sorry I was for hurting her, how much I wish I could have been what she needed, how much I still love her.
I turn my gaze out toward the green tundra below so he can't see me blink away the tears. I'm not stupid. He called her to say goodbye.
I also had to tell her how proud I am of the woman you've become. Your mom and Simon, they did so good by you, Calla, better than I ever could.
That's not true. I manage to choke out.
I wish.
His brow pulls as his voice trails.
I wish I'd called. I wish I'd got in that plane and seen your graduation. I wish I'd stolen your mom away from that doctor of hers and convinced her to come back with me.
I wish I'd made sure you knew how much I thought about you, how much I've always loved you.
His voice grows thick.
I wish I'd been someone different.